Hey, everybody, it's Andy. Welcome back to the North Point Community Church podcast. Hey, at the end of this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download our free North Point app where you can access all of our recent message content. And actually, the app is the easiest way to share all this content with a friend, and it's the easiest way to keep up with everything going on around here at North Point. But most importantly, I hope the following presentation inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Enjoy.
Because we're going to jump right into part two of a series that I kicked off last week called The Grass is Always Greener. And last week I just introduced this topic that all of us deal with. But today, as I was thinking about what should we do on Mother's Day, but what also, what's the best way to explain this message? I thought about somebody's story who I actually get the privilege of working with. If you have kids or have had kids in our middle school environment called Transit, would you throw your hand up in the air? Look at all these hands around the room and in the West and online as well. That's crazy. Loads of you have been impacted by Jen McMillan, whether you know it or not. Jen is the director of Transit. And on any given Sunday, we'll have over 1,000 middle school kids, which is awesome. But the best thing about it is all of them have an adult that's in their life. They all have a volunteer. Many of you volunteer as Transit small group leaders. And Jen leads our whole Transit team. She leads the Transit environment. And I'm not just saying this because she's speaking today, but Jen is one of the best leaders that I have ever had the privilege of working with. And her story is perfect for today. It's perfect for the series, but it's also perfect for Mother's Day. And so I asked her if she would take a break for just this week from Transit and come over here and communicate, give this message, tell a little bit of her story with us. And I think you're going to love it. And I know you're going to be encouraged by her story. So if you would put your hands together, make a little bit of noise, let her know how grateful you are for the one and only Jen McMillan.
Thank you, guys. Good morning. I'm Jen. And right off the bat, I can tell that this audience is a little different than the one that I am used to. For one, you're a lot, you know, taller. You're a little more put together. But maybe the biggest difference that I see right away is there's a whole lot less acne happening in this room, because most of you have successfully navigated the season of your life of puberty. So well done, you. You've accomplished a lot already, but it is such a privilege for me to get to be with you today as we move into part two of this series, The Grass is Greener. And as Clay mentioned, he opened it up last week, and he talked about this concept of greener grass and what does that look like. And for most of us, the idea of greener grass is the desire that is in us for something more, for something different, something better. Sometimes we think it's a relationship that we want, that's going to make the grass greener for us. Sometimes we think it's some accomplishment, something we're going to get that's going to make us wake up one day and say, I've arrived. I'm here. My grass is so green. Look at all of this around me. But the issue with that is it's so hard to come by, and really we can never achieve that on our own. And what Clay said last week, and you probably remember, is that a lot of people spend their whole lives, and they never get it, but they just keep chasing it. They just keep going after it, thinking, I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there. And then for others of us, we get it, and we actually realize that it doesn't satisfy. And today, I want to talk to a specific group of people here in this room. For a specific group of people that when you hear this idea of greener grass, when you hear about that concept, you're like, well, I might as well just tune out because this series is not for me. The idea of green grass in my own life is so dead and gone, so far away that I've just given up on it. In fact, for me, I would say that greener grass seems simply unattainable. Aren't you guys glad you got out of bed for this message? It's gonna be great. But I know that there's some of you that's truly how you feel. When you look around at your life, you think it is just not gone the way that I expected it to. And it kind of cracks me up that I get to talk about this idea of green grass because I grew up in a place called West Texas. Has anybody ever been to West Texas? We're known for a lot of things, Green grass, not it. That's not what we're known for. We have great, amazing sunsets. If you've never seen a Texas sunset, you really haven't lived. But green grass, it's just not really what we have available. So here's a little picture of what green grass looks like in Texas. You can kind of ignore the house. The house isn't the point. But look at the grass. I mean, this is kind of the state of most grass in Texas. It's brown. It's spiky, like it hurts to walk on it. And most of the time, it's kind of filled with rocks. And so green grass was not something that I grew up seeing a lot of. It was not something that, you know, my dad really worked for in our yard. green grass was not a thing for us. It just didn't seem attainable. But before you get too discouraged and before you think, why did Clay bring this chick out here to talk to us today? I want to tell you that I think that having dreams for your life, having dreams for your future is a wonderful thing. I mean, I grew up with tons of dreams. I hope you did too. Dreams are awesome. They get you out of bed in the morning. They give you a reason to be hopeful for your life. They give you things to strive for. I mean, dreams in and of themselves are awesome. And for me, growing up, I had lots of them. One of the very first ones that I remember was birthed out of my experience with the hit TV show Sesame Street. If you remember that, they would bring on these guest characters to come and speak on Sesame Street. And I remember seeing this woman and thinking she was beautiful. And I wanted to be the blonde version of her. You may know who I'm talking about. It was Crystal Gayle. Does anybody remember this person? I mean, I never followed her. She was a musician, I think. I don't know anything that she sang, but I loved her hair. And when I was a little girl, I thought, oh, if I could just get my hair to look like hers, then I would have arrived. I wanted that. Then as I got a little older, my dreams got a little more mature, you know. As I started middle school, I was kind of into choir. I thought I was a really good singer. And I had this dream of being like the next breakout artist who would combine my two musical heroes and just create this whole new form of music. My musical heroes, of course, were the one and only Shania Twain, because I was in West Texas, but also Mariah Carey. Like the old school version, the good stuff, Mariah Carey. I loved these women and their music, and I had this dream that one day I would end up with my very own Hollywood star right in between the two of them. I just knew that this was going to be my dream. But I had another dream that was kind of even competing with this one. It was like, ooh, which one am I going to choose? It's so tough. Because I had this dream, I kind of fell in love with the Olympics and specifically with gymnastics. And I watched these girls and the stuff they did, and I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to be a gymnast. And then puberty hit me, and I realized that my 5'9 frame doesn't quite fit in with the mold of the typical gymnast. I mean, look at this. This is me with the Rio team from 2016, and one of these things is not quite like the other. But shockingly, none of those dreams actually panned out for me. But, you know, I love being here specifically on Mother's Day of all days, because in reality, some of my more serious dreams, my bigger dreams for my life, came really from watching my own mom. And watching the way that she lived her life. Shout out to you. I know you're watching online. But she is an amazing woman. She seemed to, from my perspective, really have it all. She was very well educated. She was dean of students at the university in the town where I grew up. So she had this really amazing career. But more than that, she was a phenomenal mom. I mean, she raised three pretty great children, and it seemed like she could manage it all. She had an amazing, still does, have a great relationship with my dad, and she really loved Jesus, and all of this came out in her life. And she was the kind of mom that would work full-time, still manage to have dinner on the table every night, and never missed a basketball game or a choir concert. I mean, she just could do it all. And I watched her, and I thought, well, naturally, that's how my life is going to go as well. I mean, if she can do it, that's probably what I'm going to get too, right? And so a lot of these dreams that I had growing up came from watching my own amazing mother. But it didn't take me too long in life to discover that there's no guarantee that just because you want something doesn't mean that it's going to work out. In fact, I learned this, that we don't always get what we want. That's just not the way it always works. We might think that it's like, if you do this, then you'll get that. And that's kind of the equation. That's the way that life goes. But I started to learn that we don't always get what we want, regardless of our planning. No matter if you do everything, you take all the right steps, you're planning it all out, you know the path that you need to be on to accomplish the things that you want to accomplish, sometimes it just doesn't go as planned. Regardless of planning, regardless of effort. I mean, maybe you've been in this situation where you have worked really, really hard and you have really fought for the things that you want and you put in time and sweat and energy and you've still not achieved that thing that you want. And it's also not based on our own merit. That we're not just entitled to things. We're not just good enough, and so therefore we deserve to have life go exactly the way that we want it to. And for me, I began to learn this at about the age of 18. Because see, I graduated from high school, and I was super excited about college. I had so many dreams ahead of me. I thought, this is going to be such an amazing season. And when I was 18, I happened to be in a doctor's office, and they sat me down and said, Jen, we need to talk to you about something. We need to let you know that you need to prepare yourself for a life without any biological children. We've kind of looked at the situation of things, and we don't think that it is going to be possible for you to carry children. And for me at 18, I mean, that would have been hard to hear at any point in my life because that was such a big dream of mine. But to hear that at 18, I can't even explain to you how much it wrecked me. I just didn't have a category for that. It was like, what are you even saying to me right now? I mean, this is just what I thought my life would look like. I thought that I would be able to do this and have kids one day. And they said, it doesn't look very good. There's a couple things we can try. We did a few procedures to try to fix some things. And at the end of it, they were still just like, we just don't think that it's going to be in the cards for you. And so at 18, that news hit me like a ton of bricks. And it didn't even fully take effect. Like, the ripple effects of that have stayed with me for so many years. And so many things happened. Of course, I made bad choices in some areas, and my first relationship in college, when that ended, I left with a big old pack of lies that I wasn't even marriage material because no man would ever want me. And so I went through college carrying this around. And on top of that, when I looked around, the life that I was living and the world that I was in, I mean, I graduated from college a while ago now, but back in that season, things are a little different now, but it seemed like what you did was you went to college, you met your godly man who was like basically the perfect combination of like Jesus with the body of Thor, you know, just like the perfect little mashup of perfection, you know? And you met him in college, you got married right after, you maybe started working, you had a couple kids, and that was the way that life went. And that seemed to be what was happening for most of my friends around me. As I graduated from college, I was a bridesmaid in 8 weddings within the first 6 months of graduating. And so not only was I kind of brokenhearted, but I was legit broke too, because I'd spent all this money on being a bridesmaid. And so as I was launched into adulthood, I had this pile of rubble. This green grass was far from my radar. It just seemed like my hope and my thoughts for what my future would be like were just a pile of rocks in front of me. And I really didn't know what to do with it. And so as I started adulthood, I really found myself going through the motions and just having all of these feelings inside of me and not knowing what to do with them. And so I found myself growing in ways that honestly were not very pretty and in ways that I didn't even want to grow because I found myself becoming bitter. Life just wasn't good enough for me, even though there were good things going on. And truly, there were good things in my life, but I was so focused. I had such tunnel vision on this one thing that God was withholding from me. And that I just started to grow bitter. Life began to be less full of joy and hope because of my bitterness that was just growing so deeply inside of me. On top of that, I began to get envious. You know, I'd look at my friends that seemed to have it all, and then they all started having babies after they had their perfect husbands, and all of this was happening around me. And I just got envious. I was like, why do they get that and I don't? I mean, that's not fair. That's not the way life should go. And I grew entitled because I thought, I deserve this. I'm a good person. I've made good choices. Why are you withholding this from me, God? Shouldn't I get what other people are getting? And I grew discontent because life just wasn't enough. I thought that without this one dream, that my life just wouldn't be enough, that I just wouldn't find satisfaction or joy or peace. And most of all, I got anxious because for me, the future wasn't that bright and exciting. It was fearful. And I'm a pro, maybe some of you are too, at like carrying things out to the worst case scenario in your mind, you know? So at 22, I'm thinking about being 85 and in the nursing home with no one that's ever loved me and no one to take care of me and what's gonna happen to my future, you know? It sounds silly, but I really grew anxious about my future. And maybe some of you can connect with some of these emotions, some of these sentiments. And sure, you probably wouldn't say, yeah, I'm a bitter person. It's kind of my thing, you know? I mean, that's probably not how you would identify yourself. And I'm sure on most days, that's not you. But maybe on those dark days, when that dream that you've had for so long seems so far off in the distance, maybe you can connect. Maybe you resonate with some of these same feelings. Maybe for you, it's the job situation that has you down. Maybe you have been without a job for a long time and you just wonder, how long is this gonna last? Or you're in a job that you really don't like and it feels like it's going nowhere because everybody else around you keeps getting promotions and you're just stuck in the same place, but you don't feel like you can quit because you need the money. Maybe you're in a relationship. Maybe it's a dating relationship or a marriage, and it's just not going the way that you thought it would. Something's happened, trust has been broken. You find yourself in a place where you're like, this is just not what I signed up for. And honestly, when I look at the future, there doesn't seem to be a lot of hope that it's gonna get better. Some of you aren't in a relationship and you want one so bad, you're like, I'd take a mediocre one over none at all, you know? I've been in that spot where I've thought that way. Maybe for you, it's not a relationship. Maybe it's a medical diagnosis. Maybe you are in chemo and you're battling cancer. Maybe it's a parent or a spouse or someone near you that you love dearly and you think, are they going to be able to beat this? I don't know what it is for you. But all of us, when we find ourselves in that place where green grass just seems so far away, when there seems to be little hope, the question that I know I asked and probably you asked too, is what do we do with all these emotions? Because they're here, they're inside us, they're real, they're showing up. What do we do with them? Or maybe it's this question, how do we manage the pain? Because the pain is real. The pain can be raw. The pain can be overwhelming at times. And you think, I don't even know how to get out of bed today because this pain is so real. And all of us, when we find ourselves in seasons like that, I mean, we're probably looking for answers. So today, I want to share with you something that I've learned from the life of King David. And Clay introduced us to David last week in his sermon. But David, what you may or may not know is when he was a young child, people told him, somebody came and said, you're going to be king one day. And for many, 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 many years, that did not come true. And things in his life seemed to actually get kind of worse. He ended up having lots of victories in battle, but that put people against him. And now he had all these enemies, particularly King Saul, who was after him. But one of the things that I love about David is that he was a writer and a musician. And so much of what he thought and felt in those really challenging seasons of life are captured for us in this book in the Old Testament called Psalms. So today I want to read to you from Psalms 13, because I think it speaks so much into this topic that we're talking about today. David says this in Psalms 13, how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? One thing I know about suffering is that when you are in the middle of it, it feels like it is never going to end. It feels like, where is that light at the end of the tunnel? I've heard about it. Maybe it's out there, but where is it? When is it going to end? And this was David in this moment. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? Will you hide your face from me? Do you ever feel like in times of suffering or sorrow that you just can't find God in the moment? It's like, where are you? I need you to show up. David goes on to say, how long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Those seasons that are so dark when you just wrestle all day long, it's like you want to focus on something else. You don't want to focus on the pain and think about how hard it is. But oh my goodness, that sorrow is so real and so fresh. It's like, how do you even move past that? How do you stop wrestling? What do you do with all this sorrow? What do you do when it feels like people are triumphing over you? David goes on to say, look on me and answer. Lord, my God, give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him. And my foes will rejoice when I fall. See, for David, his life was literally on the line. There were people chasing after him that wanted to not only see him fail, but really wanted to end up taking his life. I mean, he knew that he was in a dark place. He knew that if God didn't show up, that his life might just end. And that is a pretty dark place to be. So I don't know where you are today. For some of you, I'm sure life is going really great, and this message is not what you expected on Mother's Day. For some of you, you're in this place where you're like, yep, I get what David is feeling. So if you were to rewrite this psalm today, what might you say? What would you insert? Would you say, how long, Lord, do I have to wait to become a mom? How long do I have to wait to see you show up in this situation where I really need your help, where I need you to rescue me? How long will that son or daughter that is wayward, how long will they continue to rebel, Lord? How long? How long? For me, as I continued through my adult life, I found myself at kind of a milestone. It was my 25th birthday, which I know there's still a lot of life ahead at that point. But I found myself on my 25th birthday. I was still living in Texas, and a group of girlfriends said, hey, let's go to the beach for your birthday. So we went to Galveston Beach. And it was a great weekend, super fun, lots going on. And yet I found myself in a really dark place. I just was not excited. For me, it was like this milestone that just marked what I had not had yet in my life, marked what I had not accomplished, what I had not been given. And I really didn't know what to do with that. I'm trying to be happy and put on a happy face, but things are just not where I want them to be. And I found myself in that moment really going to God and just wondering. I went out to the beach one morning and nobody was out there. It was just me. And I found myself just pacing up and down the beach. And you know, when it's quiet on the beach and it's great, it's never really quiet because the waves are so loud. But I wondered this question. I wondered, God, do I have permission to be honest with you? Can I be honest with you for just a minute? And I had never really taken this chance before with God to just get gut level honest with him. But everything inside of me, all of these emotions had just been piling up to where they just could not stay in any longer. And so that morning on the beach, I let God have it. I mean, I was just pacing up and down and I just began yelling and screaming at him, God, where are you in my life? Why do I not see you show up? Why don't I have these things that are such a dream for me? Why do you withhold them from me? Because that's how it felt at the moment. It felt like God had abandoned me, like he had deserted me. And I came through that morning and I thought, I just got to the end of myself, you know? And the thing that I felt was, there has to be a way forward. I don't know how I can go on living like this with the facade that things are good, with the thing, you know, the face that says I'm happy when I'm dying inside. There has to be a way forward. And for you, if you've ever been in a season like this, maybe you can relate. So how do we answer the question of when our dreams of greener grass have been replaced with rocky soil? How do we move forward? And I didn't know how to do that that day on the beach. But thankfully, David had some insight that I didn't have at the moment, because David wasn't done with his psalm where we left it off. David goes on and he says this. It's amazing. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. It's like David was able to just push pause in his present circumstances. I mean, he's on the run. He's being chased. He knows his life is on the line. And yet he just stops in the middle of it all and says, you know what, though, God? I trust in your unfailing love because it's unfailing, because it's been with me. It's with me now. I know this much is true. And I'm going to go ahead and rejoice in your salvation, even though you haven't saved me yet. Even though I'm still here waiting for you to show up to save my life, I know that I can rejoice in your salvation because you've gotten me out of sticky spots before. David was able to pull back and have this perspective, and he wraps up by saying, I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. See, I think it's an act of will. I think it's a choice that David was able to make to say, even though my situation seems bleak, even though my circumstances are not what I wanted, even though greener grass died long ago for me, I will sing the Lord's praise because he has been good to me. And I have no doubt that when David wrote that, that things were coming to mind, that he was thinking about the ways that God had been good to him. And so what I learned from David and what I think we can all take away is that when the dreams of greener grass have been replaced with rocky soil, the way to move forward is to shift our focus. To shift our focus from what we don't have, to try to expand that tunnel vision, to look up and say, I may not have this thing that I want right now in this present moment, but let me take a step back and look out and see what I do have. For David, he was able to do that, and it changed his outlook. And for me, I began to learn something similar. For me, that Galveston moment, it was not this magic answer to my life. It wasn't like those desires ever went away. I mean, I still really wanted to be a mom. I still really wanted to get married one day. But I began to see, because of the Lord's help, that he was for me. I think in that moment, I thought maybe I'd kind of get in trouble. Like I was sort of talking back to my dad, you know, and he was going to come get me now because I was just letting God have it. But what I experienced in that moment was so far from that. In fact, I honestly had greater intimacy with God moving forward than I had ever experienced before because I was finally willing to be real with him. I was finally willing to lay it out on the line. And it wasn't like God spoke to me audibly. I didn't hear anything except the waves. But what I did experience in that moment was hope. And I realized that God was with me in those times. And so as I finished out my 20s, I began my 30s. It was really cool. God gave me some opportunities. I moved here to Atlanta. There were a lot of things going really, really well for me. I still didn't have this dream that I wanted, but things were going great, and I felt more myself. You know that feeling when you wake up and you're like, I'm me today. That's where I got with God. It wasn't that everything had worked out. I didn't know how my story was going to wrap up, but I knew that I could hope in him, and I knew that he was faithful. And he's really the headline of this story because he was the one that gave me courage to get up and keep living my life and keep being who he created me to be. And if you fast forward a couple years into my story, I did end up meeting an amazing guy. And he's about as close as you can get to the mashup of Jesus and Thor. He's pretty great. And we met, and even in meeting him and starting to fall in love with him, some of those old fears, those lies came right back up. And I thought, what's he going to do when I tell him I can't have children? You know, is he going to leave? Is he going to say, you're not marriage material and move on? I didn't know. And the day that I had the courage to tell him is one that I will just never forget because his response was honestly just God's gracious gift to me because he said, Jen, I know that the desire and dream of being a mom has been one for you for a long time. And I have no doubt that God is going to provide a way for us to have a family. It may not be biologically, but it might. But even if it's not, we can become parents. And I believe that God will be faithful to us in that. And I could have married him right there in that Buckhead condo, really. But we didn't. We got engaged and, you know, had a beautiful wedding. But it was so amazing to just see God's faithfulness. And I waited for him a little bit, but it was worth the wait, you know? And then a year and a half into marriage, we welcomed our baby girl, who we had biologically, and I carried full term. Yep. And her name is Maddie, and she's here on the front row with my husband listening today, which is super cool. But we had her, and then 2 years later, we had Brooklyn. And if you've been totally distracted by me today, and you're like, does she just carry weight kind of weird? Like, what's happening? Thank you for having the wisdom to know not to ask, first off. But yes, I can tell you that I'm 18 weeks pregnant with our third baby. Yeah. And it's just amazing to see how my story has unfolded. And, you know, when Clay asked me to speak about this, I thought, I don't know if this is going to land well with people, because they might hear my story and say, well, sure, you can talk about that because your story got tied up with a pretty little bow. And you know what? God did answer my prayers in ways that I honestly never even knew if he would. And I don't really know why that was his choice. Although I think it's pretty cool that he decided to show off and say, I'm bigger than any medical diagnosis. That's pretty amazing. But I don't know why he answered my prayer that way, you know? And the truth is, I don't know what our future holds, and neither do you. This part of my life has gone better than I could have ever hoped. But I have lived long enough to know that our futures aren't promised, and we don't know that we'll get our next breath, let alone what the rest of our life will entail. And so I know that there could still be rocky days ahead for us. But what I hope is that the lessons that I've learned will carry me through. And what I hope for all of you and for me is that as we go forward, even in those times where we just have such heartache and such unanswered prayers, I hope that we can remember to shift our focus. Because when we are able to shift our focus from just that thing that is dominating our thoughts, that we think is the only thing that can make us happy, when we begin to look around at what else God has done for us, it leads us all to the same place. It leads us to gratitude. And I know that this might sound like the church answer and what you expect me to say talking to you up here, but have you experienced this to be true? That when you can shift your perspective off of what you don't have and look at what you do have, I mean, can you go any other path except to be grateful? I haven't found a way. But it's just amazing when you can find yourself in that place where you can truly recognize not everything in my life is perfect. It hasn't gone the way that I thought it would. But I can be grateful in this moment for what God has done. And I know that in a room this size, not only are there all different kinds of dreams that are at different places of being fulfilled or not, but also some of you in this room probably would look at me and say, celebrate what God has done? I'm not even into that yet. Like, I'm not claiming to be a Jesus follower. I don't know about this whole God thing. And if that's you, that's totally fine. And I'm so glad that you're here today. And I'm not here to try to convince you that you need to start following God, although I think it would be great for you. But what I do know, is that you're going to be better off if you choose this path of gratitude. Your life will be richer and more full. You'll have more hope if you choose to be grateful within your circumstances. But for those of us in this room that do claim to follow Christ, that do have a relationship with him, you guys, what do we have except gratitude for what he has done for us? I mean, going back to this Psalm of David, when he says, I trust in your unfailing love. I mean, if you just pause for a minute and think about your life, can you honestly think of a time where God's love has failed you? I really can't. It didn't always look like I thought it would look, but in hindsight, he has been there with me through it all. And we can rejoice in our salvation. I believe that God can reach into your circumstances today and rescue you. But more than that, we have the hope of an eternal salvation that can never be taken away from us. And that is secure. That is a reason to praise and a reason to be grateful. And for us that follow Jesus, we can sing the Lord's praise because he has been good. He's been good to me. He's been good to you. And so if I were in transit right now, this message, first of all, would have been half as long. But also, I would leave you with a question, and I would send you to small group with your amazing small group leaders. Thank you to all of you. And I would say, talk about this in your group. Since I can't do that, we don't have a small group right now, I do want to just create some space for you, some space for you to answer this question. Where in your life can you see God's goodness? I mean, today, right now, in your present circumstances, where can you see signs of God's goodness? It doesn't mean that the pain is gone. It doesn't mean that you're supposed to just ignore what has not been completed in your life that you want to experience. It doesn't mean that. But could you just for a few minutes raise your eyes up off this thing that is just so wrapping you up that you can't see past it? Could you set it aside just for a moment and say, where in my life have I seen God's goodness?